Tell you what, it's all happening at the Human Rights Commission. It's just, it's a smackdown taking place over the issue of free speech, exactly what it means, and particularly over the question of racial vilification laws and the idea of having protection from racial vilification, whether a free speech should extend to protect your right to racially vilify someone. A couple of Human Rights Commissioners taking opposing views. I've perhaps overstated it by saying there's a smackdown, but they're certainly at odds over this. Tim Soutphommasane, whose focus is on racial affairs, is the Race Discrimination Commissioner. And Tim Wilson, who was newly appointed last year as the Freedom Commissioner, has only just taken up the job. They have different conceptions of what freedom of speech might mean and the way it should look in our society to best protect human rights. And Tim Soutphommasane gave a major speech this week, which has really fleshed this out. He's a bit of a political philosopher, and so is Scott Stevens, editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website, who can take us through some of the finer points of this philosophical but ultimately social and political debate. Thank you very much for joining us again, Scott.
It's always nice to be here.
Negative versus positive freedom of speech seems to be what this comes down to, exactly what freedom means. Tim Soutphommasane's argument's an interesting one because of the nuances of the philosophy he goes into. How can you take us through it?
Isn't it nice when philosophy makes its way out into the public arena and just stretches its arms and flexes its muscles and tries to remind us all why it really is so important what you believe about certain concepts? Look, it's really interesting to me, Waleed, that both of these two thinkers, Tim Soutphommasane and Tim Wilson, they really do disagree quite fundamentally on what makes up freedom, but also what a very a significant post-war philosopher, UK philosopher named Isaiah Berlin, meant by the concept of negative freedom. Let's see if we can't sort of flesh it out something like this. Isaiah Berlin, in the immediate post-war period, was very concerned that in the triumphalism following the overflow of fascism and against the burgeoning threat of communism, that the idea of Western freedom had become a little bit too flabby, that the word itself had maybe become a little bit too defined, too undefined. So in a very famous, in fact, his inaugural professorial lecture, a very famous lecture called Two Concepts of Freedom, Two Concepts of Liberty, I beg your pardon. He tried to demarcate what we might mean when we talk about freedom. So he defined one as positive freedom, and positive freedom might roughly be considered as freedom from. In other words, what do I have the ability to pursue? With all of the things removed from my path, what inner choices do I have the capability to make? What
sort of
destiny?
Like a self-realization principle. So the freedom is something that you have in order to achieve the best self that you can be or the best life that you can attain.
Yes, that's part of it, Waleed. But I think the other part of it is something that is very, very ancient. It goes right back to someone like Aristotle, even to someone like Augustine, where it's the choices that one then makes that demonstrates the formation that you've gone through as a person. In other words, once you choose something, you prove whether you are free or not. In other words, a bad choice, a choice which degrades yourself and dehumanizes or humiliates people around you, could not be regarded as a legitimate exercise of freedom. In other words, freedom, yes, it's self-mastery, but also it's a degree of a self-disciplining. There's a degree of moral formation that goes along with it as well. Berlin's concern was that, what if we regard some positive concept of freedom, the choice that the state is the most important political entity out there, and my choice is to give myself wholeheartedly in subservience to it. This is sounding a bit like totalitarianism, is it not?
Right.
And so that's why Berlin tried to carve out this other space, which he referred to as negative freedom. In other words, if positive freedom is freedom to, then negative freedom is, you guessed it, freedom from.
And so that's non-interference from the state, effectively. I'll do what I do, and the state can just leave me alone, and that is what constitutes freedom.
That's exactly right. Now, what happens, and here's where we reach our current dilemma, what happens when the great enemy, no matter what certain libertarians say, what happens when the great enemy is not so much state overreach or totalitarian threats in Eastern Europe, but what happens when the threat becomes certain legislations handed down by the state to ensure that other people's, that the existence of other people – begin to impinge upon my ability to say what I like, choose what I like, set my own destiny the way that I like. In other words, what happens when the enemy isn't an overarching or totalitarian state, but what happens when the enemy is the existence of other people beginning to crowd into my own private free space? And I think there's where this whole issue becomes incredibly muddled. And I'm quite interested that the way that Tim Tsu Pamasan and Tim Wilson are kind of locking swords is over what Isaiah Berlin really meant when he referred to negative freedom. Because one thing that Isaiah Berlin certainly didn't mean was inactivity or turning a blind eye to injustice.
Right, and this is where Tim Tsu Pamasan really comes into it, because his focus is on race and racial discrimination and the removal of racial vilification laws and what that might mean. Here he is speaking on Breakfast yesterday about what might happen if our current legal arrangements changed.
I'm very concerned about there being a green light to racists and bigots, for people to believe that they have complete freedom to say whatever they like, to give full vent to their prejudice, and to racially harass, abuse, and vilify others.
That's Tim Tsu Pamasan. Tim Wilson replied, I suppose, well, beforehand, on Late Line in February. This is how he put it.
What I'd rather have is to have people be open about their prejudice, so that people can shine a bright light into dark corners and to expose people for their discrimination, their prejudice, and why it exists, and also for it to be challenged. Because when you look at people who have prejudice deep in their heart, if you tell them they can't exercise that, all they do is go off into the corner and maintain their prejudice in their heart, rather than interacting, learning, and growing, and having a challenge by people who outline why it's so foolhardy.
Tim Tsu Pamasan regards Tim Wilson's position, Scott, as being a little naive. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
The first Tim Tsu Pamasan,
I know, they're not helping, are they?
The two Tims, rightly points out that the whole purpose of the Racial Discrimination Act is actually to have a civilizing and educative function. I think that's really important. We're not talking about being punitive or punitivistic. The point is that there is a social and legal mechanism to ensure that certain types of behavior are encouraged, modeled, rewarded. Tim Wilson is imagining, and just from the clip that you played, he is actually in some ways imagining much a similar thing, but it's by the organic, free-flowing, spontaneous interactions with people all around us that the rough edges are taken off. And I think here, Waleed, is where we really meet a pretty serious problem. I mean, I'm no great believer in the law solving all of our social ills. I think maybe we're giving a little bit too little importance to the function of education, but also cultural examples
in civil society.
Civil society itself, but also cultural examples like films and literature as modeling the best sort of behavior. At the same time, I mean, my real question to someone like Tim Wilson would be, you know, not only is he turning a blind eye, I think, to some of the existing power imbalances that already exist within society, but I think the other thing that's simply being missed here is that freedom is never something that can exist in and of itself. Freedom is always defined by something else. And I think, you know, Waleed, part and parcel of any satisfactory moral reflection is the idea that people exist in this world that provide limits and curtail my free exercise of myself. As soon as we try to find perverse ways of circumventing the existence of other people, rather than allowing those people to make their way into our lives, to begin defining the way that we see ourselves and the world around us, as soon as we find clever ways of trying to circumvent the existence of other people, whether that be through blatantly racist or simply culturally buffoonish or nihilistic rhetoric, or if I can use the example of, say, of, you know, romantic life, you know, sort of circumventing my dissatisfaction with a sexual partner by indulging in more and more pornography. Mm. I mean, what that does is actually limits the capacity of people around me to engage in productive, life-giving, fruitful relationships. And I think here's where the real issue of freedom comes into its own.
Right. It's also where power imbalances can close off areas of debate which means we might have a formal kind of freedom, but whether or not it's substantive. It's a really huge debate, and it's a massive paper that that Tim Soutphommasane has published, and you've published it, Scott, so thank you very much for doing so, and thanks for speaking to us today. And with any
Always
chance,
a pleasure.
With any luck, people will read it and make up their own minds. Scott Stephens, editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website. It's news time now, 7 o'clock, back in 5.